Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Born in South Wales and now based in New York City, Bright Light Bright Light has carved out quite the career for himself. His entire career has been as an independent artist, but he has achieved reach that few major label artists succeed. He has won fans of and recorded with many of his biggest musical icons, Sir Elton John, Erasure, All Scissor Sisters members, Justin Vivian Bond, Nikki Harris, and Donna DeLory of Madonna fame, to name but a few. Bright Light, Bright Light has been the opening act for a number of different artists, namely Cher, Ellie Goulding, John Grant, Erasure, Scissor Sisters, and Sir Elton John. His studio albums include 2012's Make Me Believe in Hope, 2014's Life is Easy, 2016's Choreography, which won him WINQ Magazine's Musician of the Year Award, and saw him become the first unsigned artist to perform on Graham Norton's BBC One TV show with Sir Elton John in tow. 2020's Fun City, which was a UK number one dance album and featured 12 LGBTQ plus collaborators, and 2024's Enjoy Youth. Alongside his artist work, his love of pop culture blossoms in the form of his hugely active DJ profile. In New York City, he runs the weekly Time Out New York recommended Romeo and Michelle's Saturday Tea Dance at actor Alan Cumming's Space Club Cumming. Elsewhere, he has DJed Pride events across the world and high-profile music festivals, including Bestival and Glastonbury. Bright Light, Bright Light has also written songs for Bananarama and RuPaul's Drag Race alumni Scarlett Envy and Tia Coffey. Remixed alumni Jujubee, Katya and Miss Cracker, and pop legends Dani Minogue, Bananarama, and Erasure. For him, music is about connection. He uses his shows and DJ sets to raise money and awareness for many LGBTQ+ and humanitarian causes. He runs his own label, YSKWN, which also acts as an umbrella connecting and amplifying LGBTQ+ voices in the arts and local businesses. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Bright Light, Bright Light. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I am in New York City, which is where I live. I just got back from a week of shows across the UK and I am doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. All good this side. So why the name and why the choice of Bright Light, Bright Light?
It's a quote from Gremlins, the film, and I am very inspired by 80s and 90s cinema. So I don't know why, but it popped into my head as the first thing when I started to think about a moniker or a stage name, and I couldn't think of anything better. So it stuck.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in this creative space, this music world? And how, I know it's a number of years, and how did that journey progress to where we are currently?
I don't think I ever really actively thought about becoming part of the music industry. You know, I just made music and... Yeah, where I grew up, everyone had a sort of fairly understandable job. Like they were a teacher or they were a doctor or a whatever, you know, but you could understand and lots of other people did it. So to be a musician was really kind of like a hobby in my mind. So I just always assumed that I would do that alongside a job. And I worked in the music industry straight from college and did that for like 2 years. And it wasn't working out, so I quit and I just started busking on the underground in London and did that with some temp work and bar work and eventually made enough to pay my rent. And then just kind of got better at music and did more and more shows and it eventually snowballed into a career and I ended up doing it full time. So it was very a happy accident to end up being part of the music industry.
So when you were busking... and doing those other sort of temp jobs, but busking, as you mentioned, in London. Was it a goal to say, allow it to, for you to improve and to eventually to become a career? Or was it just a way for a means and ends to make money at that time?
It was both, I suppose. You know, at that point, it was like, well, I really love doing music, and I think I'm okay at writing songs. And I got the license to busk, and it seemed like a really good use of time and talent, I suppose, to try and get a bit of money and to try and get a bit of publicity, recognition, or exposure. And I suppose just as time went on, it seemed to be more and more of like a way to make music some kind of like financial stability, or at least one of the income streams that I had.
Did you say you have to get a license to busk?
Yes, on the London Underground. They have designated spots.
Oh, wow.
And you have to apply for a license to perform on the London Underground.
Do you get allocated a spot, or do you request a specific spot?
You would pick a specific spot. You'd have to phone up every Wednesday or whenever it was, I can't remember, and pick your slot for the week.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's very interesting. I thought I didn't realize it was as formal as that. I thought you just stop playing.
I mean, in many ways, that was good because it meant that everyone had the same sort of chance of getting slots that they wanted to do. And the ones that I picked, actually, very few people wanted those. So I was quite lucky. But there were some spots that were more lucrative that were very competitive. So you had to be very quick at calling the second that the slots became free and trying to get through. And it was a little bit hit or miss, but it worked for me.
And how long would a busking session last? How many hours?
Like 2 hours.
Two.
Yeah, you could do as many as you wanted to in the day, but each slot was 2 hours.
Okay, this is fascinating. I never actually realized. Okay, so you reference writing songs. So from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes, what is that process? What is your creative brain? Is it easy every time? Let's dive into that process.
It is completely different every time. So there's no real particular method that I have for writing songs. Some songs start with a beat. Some of them start with a complete a cappella. Some of them start together. So some of them I write the music and the lyrics at the same time. It's very changeable depending on what song I'm writing and what the mood is. So there's no specific path that I take when I'm writing the songs. It changes with each track.
And is it always a solo endeavor, or do you ever collaborate with other people?
No, a lot of the songs that I write are collaborative, which I really enjoy. So quite often I'll start with something that they've sent me, like an instrumental. For example, Ian Masterson, who I write with, sends me a complete instrumental, and I'll do the top line over that, which is the term for all of the vocal parts, the melody, the lyrics, everything like that, harmonies. John Shave does it in a slightly different way, where he will send me some kind of like song sketches, and I'll then rearrange the little instrumental parts to create a verse chorus structure. And then I'll write over the top of that. When I went in with Richard X, he had an instrumental, and then we worked on that together to do the vocal parts. With Baby Daddy, we wrote both instrumental and vocal parts together for the songs that we wrote. So it changes with each person, and that's really cool. It keeps it very interesting for me.
Yeah.
And I really like to collaborate because it makes your brain work in ways that you wouldn't do just by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I love writing songs by myself. I just do that all the time anyway. But when you do get to collaborate, I feel like it's a very special, special process, which you kind of don't even really actively do things sometimes. You just, you're in the moment, and then ideas come without you overthinking about them.
Okay, so now I also noticed I was looking at your socials, and I see that you do remixes of other artists' music.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that process, and how do you balance between releasing your own original stuff and also doing sort of those remixes or DJ stuff that you work on?
I don't think remixing interferes with my own stuff at all, really, because they have their own schedule and their own timeline. And usually I don't have to do anything to promote the other remixes, so it's only if I want to. I think it's really fun to remix other people's songs because you have a starting point, and so you can kind of create a world around somebody else's vocal or song. And they usually send you, you know, the different stems, like the drums, the pianos, the vocals. And I try and really go just from the vocal and create something else around it so that it's a bit more unique in a way. But it is fun, and I love playing with other people's voices. It kind of allows you to do things that I can't do with my own voice. So it's really fun. It's a really, really fun process.
And have you ever noticed that by remixing or doing these remixes for other artists, it sparked ideas for you for your own original music?
Yeah, I think any time that you do something which is more collaborative or less introverted, that it does provoke a lot more ideas in your head and you kind of start thinking in different ways. Because if you're building something around someone else's voice, you don't really think in your own world, particularly you're thinking like outside of your comfort zone. And that always provokes new ideas. And that's very exciting to me.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the idea of the aesthetic of holding something. I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the booklet, listening from song one to whatever number. I'm sure you are aware, if not, CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are making a massive comeback. And we've also got these streaming platforms that people listen to or consume music on. What is your observation and perceptions of where the landscape is at the moment?
I think it's very different artist to artist. I have a very strong physical fan base. So I sold thousands of records for the album on its first week because I have a lot of fans who are, you know, my age or a little bit older, who come from a generation of going out to buy CDs, cassettes, vinyl, and they've really held on to that love. So that's really exciting for me that I get to do physical formats for all of my releases. And I buy vinyl, you know, I don't buy CDs, but I do buy vinyl. And I like the physical nature of music. I like the artwork and the liner notes and the lyric booklet and just being able to bring the album to life through artwork is so special to me. And I can't really think about music without that. So to just stream songs, and I do stream as well. You know, I travel a lot. So obviously I spend a lot of time streaming when I'm on the go. I do listen to lots of new music in that way, but I feel like I don't really get the 3D experience of music when it's just streamed. So if I really like an album enough, then I will buy the physical format and see what people have done with it. And I always feel really shortchanged when people have made a really minimal effort on packaging and, you know, the liner notes or even like the imagery inside the album. I feel like it's a complete waste of an opportunity to do something exciting with your record if it's just a bland release, you know? Like, you have the world at your fingertips and you're paying for something to be printed. Why would you not make it fabulous, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so let's unpack the latest release, your latest album. I saw it was doing well on the charts, on the Apple iTunes. I was very excited. I was monitoring every day all your exciting posts. So tell us all about it.
It was wild. I really didn't know how it was going to perform week one. You know, after COVID, things have changed a lot and I'm independent. I released through my own label. I don't have a manager. I don't have a publisher. So, you know, I'm aware of the limitations of my reach, especially internationally. But yeah, it sold really well in the UK. The first day it was number 7 on the charts and you get the sales updates every day and it was slipping, but not as much as I thought it was going to. And then there was a real chance it would go top 20. It was number 23 on the midweeks. So it eventually ended up at like number 60 overall when streaming kicks in, because I don't know if your listeners understand how the charts work, but they collate streaming, songs to create like effective sales of records. So say if you are casually listening to 9, 10, 11 ABBA songs throughout the day, if they are attributed to the product ABBA Gold, which is always in the charts, then those will random plays will collate to one sale of that album. But you think about like how many people in the country are just randomly listening to ABBA songs that come on shuffle or whatever throughout their catalog. All of those passive listens collect to passive sales. And so you'll notice, like, as I was number 7 on the day 1 and 60 on day 7, all of the albums between me and the other new releases are greatest hits compilations. So it's Red Hot Chili Peppers greatest hits, Elton John greatest hits, Billy Joel greatest hits, Fleetwood Mac greatest hits, ABBA Gold, which is a greatest hits. And it's the same greatest hits that were in the charts the last time I put out an album. So it's not sales, which is really interesting. So while it was number 60 in the sales chart, so the top 10 of the actual sales, digital and physical, I was number eight. That was the eighth biggest selling album in the UK, but that translates to number 60 because of streaming figures. So it's really fascinating to look at all the breakdowns of stuff, you know. And I was like the ninth most downloaded album, something like that. Number three in the independent releases. So take major labels out of that. It was the third biggest selling album by an independent artist. So it did really well. And I'm absolutely blown away by how the fans rallied around the record and really came out and just like bought so many copies of the album. It was really wild. An amazing week, you know?
Well, that's fantastic. And I'm so glad you explained to me about the charts, because I go into the charts every single week and look up. And now I understand why the greatest hits of so many of those artists are always there and remain there. So thank you. You've given me a newer understanding, a fresher understanding of the charts. So thank you for that. What do you enjoy about performing live?
The connection. You know, I really love making music, but I don't make it to just be listened to by myself in a room. It's really about going into the world and seeing how those songs connect with real people in real situations. And the best thing about being on tour or being on a stage is just seeing people's responses to songs, and you get to see what their favorite songs are. You get to see how they respond to the songs. And I struggled with my album Fun City, which came out during lockdown, because I really thought that no one cared about it. You know, I didn't feel any interpersonal connection because we had no shows for the whole album campaign. Everything was just over Zoom, and it was really sad. So the first time that I got to play those songs in London and people were singing along, I actually cried, because I truly thought that people didn't care about that record.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing experience just to see that people had embraced those songs, and it blew me away. So being live across the world is the joy of music for me. You know, it's so special to just be in a room and all have that collective experience where you remind yourself and other people like the power of music and how it can take you out of your everyday life, and it can make you feel new things and dream new things, and just be like a different person for that little bit of time.
Okay, so I've got a point of discussion around this, and I have it with a lot of the artists I interview. I'm that person who's normally right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'll take my phone out for maybe a couple of photos, a couple of videos, and I put my phone away. But I notice a lot of people around me will have their cell phones out for 60, 70, 80% of the time, tweeting, posting, whatever they're doing at the time. Do you not feel that that takes away from the connection you were referencing earlier, or it's just where society is at the moment?
I think I'm just used to it. Okay. You know, I really don't care what people are doing. If they're tweeting about it, that is really good for me. And I'm glad that they're excited enough to tweet about it. You know, it would be kind of nice if they maybe put that till the end of the show. And I'm fine if people are like taking videos and whatever. And I would, as long as they're tweeting and not just like answering an email, you know, whatever. I don't really mind. I think people just don't overthink it. So they just do something and then they immediately post it. That's what people do everywhere in life, you know? So I really don't have a problem with it.
Now, we were discussing the sales of the new album, but let's dive more into the songs and the tracks. Any favorites?
My favorite, I have two favorites. I'm really, really proud of Heart Slap. I think that's maybe the best dance song that I've ever written. And it really makes me feel so powerful, that song. It makes me feel so fabulous and so full of life and so full of energy. And I love my friend Michael Kilgore. I love our voices together. I love everything about that song. But I'm truly, truly proud of the title track, Enjoy Youth. I think that's maybe my favorite song that I've ever written. Okay. It really came out of nowhere. And John sent me this very short, like 1 minute instrumental. And I just, oh my God, the first time I heard it, I was like, this is a really special piece of music. And it was just on his hard drive, you know, being unused. And I chopped it up and created the song and really sort of improvised it. And it's very unusual for a song of mine, the way that it unfolds and the chorals and, you know, the French section. But I wrote it about my best friend, and I'm really proud of the lyrics. I'm so proud of Beth Hirsch's vocals on it. I'm really moved by that song. Like, I get so emotional when I sing it, and it feels a bit like my film song, you know?
Yes.
I'm so proud of that song. I really am just so proud of it. So I'll say the title track. And it's the only time I've ever had a title track to an album as well. So
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 2 years, 20 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there are millions of them. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Do you want to give me a mood or a theme or something?
Let's go dance.
Let's say Gina G, Ooh-Ah, just a little bit.
Okay.
We'll go Shapeshifters, Lola's Theme. We'll do Basement Jacks. And we'll do, which song of theirs? Red Alert, I think it's amazing. We'll do Buckethead's The Bomb. And then to close, we will do Armin van Helden, You Don't Know Me, featuring Dwayne Harden.
Nice mix. Most of them on my list. I need to add a couple, so thank you. Okay, so the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that I hope that this record brings you some moments of joy. You know, the timeline that we're living in is really dark and really heavy. And whatever your situation is in the world, it's kind of impossible to be full of optimism at the moment because the news cycles are just so depressing. And if you have any kind of social conscience, you really are under attack from so many angles at the moment. And I want you to remember how important it is to find moments of joy in your day for yourself and to give moments of joy to other people. It's not always easy to do, but just remember that, like, if your social battery is empty, you're no good to yourself or to anyone else. So please just remember to be kind to yourself and to those people that you love and to do something that makes you smile or laugh if you can during the day. I hope that my album will provide some moments of levity to people that listen to it in the way that I wrote it for myself to provide my own moments of levity. But just remember that, like, while a lot of what you see in front of you might be very dark and very heavy, there is so much color and love behind that hidden for you to try and remember to pick out amongst the gloom. So please just remember to do that for yourselves.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.